So speaking of aging vessels, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people who are now more interested in those kind of obscure concrete or noticing, right, that I like a stainless Chardonnay versus an oak Chardonnay, asking about if you have a Pinot Gris or Grigio, asking about aging vessels for that. Are there any things that you guys feel really help bring out aromatics or mouthfeel? Is there a general approach that has changed over time for you for working with some of these grapes?
I think experimentation is still full swing. I mean, we're looking at, as Jay mentioned, ceramic vessels. I don't personally have concrete, but we're doing more with experimenting with ceramic and trying to learn why those are interesting. And it's not necessarily, I think you said it well, Maggie, about mouthfeel and characteristics, where we're trying to enhance what's there as opposed to add a layer or a component necessarily with those types of vessels. I'm finding that, I mean, I got oak behind me. Those are older barrels. And as these things age, we get into nuances of being in a barrel as opposed to the taste of an oak barrel. And getting older as an industry and as a particular as a winery, you have more options for keeping things like that. It takes a while to get a 10-year-old barrel. You know, it takes 10 years. We're looking at larger oak vessels too. We got some 1200 liter Stücks in this year. So they're on the beginning of their phase. So, you know, we'll review this in 10 years and see how we like those. And being in a smaller, nimble industry like this gives us this opportunity to try these things without massive risk in terms of what the customer expects, because we're really trying to build in, expect the unexpected from this great region. You know, no two concerts should be the same. You can play different tunes every, you know, it's the same band, but different tunes. It makes it a more interesting comeback day after day, right?
It's easy for us as a, you know, the size of this industry to really celebrate vintage variation as well.
Agree. I've been experimenting with non-Saccharomyces yeasts. I make a dry Riesling, for example, which I pattern after a Grand Cru Alsace Riesling, which we can do down here quite easily, actually. What I did this year differently is I inoculate with a species called Metchnikovia pulcherrima, which is a non-fermenting yeast, but it scavenges oxygen. So I don't even have to use any sulfur when I crush the grapes. I just throw the Metchnikovia in there. And then I add a second yeast called Torulospora delbrueckii. And Torulospora will ferment to about 6 or 7% alcohol and then it quits. So you can't really use it to make, you know, a 12% or 13% alcohol wine completely. But what it does do is it emphasizes some of the thiols and some of the aromatic substances in the grape, as well as building a lot of mannoproteins, which create a very buttery texture in the wine. So now you have a big full-bodied Riesling with a creamy texture, which is almost unheard of in Riesling. And then that blazing acidity that Riesling is famous for in the finish, and it makes quite a spectacular wine. So those extra different kinds of yeasts are also one of the new things that have come out recently, and I think can really add some complexity and interest to some of the varieties that we're working with already. In terms of, you know, guiding the style of a particular wine, not just the cooperage, but, you know, the way you ferment it.
Yeah, I like those yeasts as well. We got a concrete egg in 2013 to do Pinot Gris specifically. We got a second one 2 years ago. I've done Pinot Gris, Riesling, Chardonnay, and now Pinot Blanc in the concrete eggs. All of those varieties react completely different in the egg. Some favorably, some not so, but you know, like Brian said, it's still a complete experimentation. I really am honing in on Pinot Blanc in the concrete egg. I really like what it does mouthfeel wise. That's mainly why I got the egg. I really wasn't concerned too much with the aromatics that are going to come from the concrete, is it adds the minerality in your mind. It does, I think. Well, I can tell now if something has been fermented in concrete. There's an aroma to it, but it's not necessarily a minerality, I don't think. It is really nice for the mouthfeel. The mid palate really builds the mid palate. Like I said earlier, we did Gamay last year in the egg, pump overs in the egg, and then pressed it and aged it again in concrete. I got that idea from a Beaujolais called La Sienne, which when I knew I was getting some Gamay, I just started drinking all the Gamay I could. And I found this La Sienne was an absolutely beautiful wine. It's made in giant concrete vats. There's no oak. And unlike some of the non-oaked amphora reds that I've had, where you're on your tippy toes waiting for that oak, you're waiting for it to come across at the end, this oak driver for Cabernet Franc or Malbec or something that's been done in amphora. I don't feel like I get that from Gamay and kind of the concrete. It doesn't need it. It's just all pure fruit. I'm really enjoying the eggs. We got the ceramic barrels 2 years ago to do Chardonnay because I want to try to diversify Chardonnay. And this year we'll be bottling a straight bottling of the two Klaber Chardonnays. Again, it's mouthfeel. It doesn't have anything really to do with aromatics. The lees react really well to stirring inside the ceramic, but I really like barrels. I really like big barrels. I got into 500 liter puncheons back when the dollar and the euro were pretty much at parity, and it was super cheap to buy a puncheon. I have about 30 puncheons now. I think it really respects our fruit up here a lot more than the smaller barriques do. There is a place for the smaller new oak barriques in our red program because you're not going to get away from the people who want that big punch of American oak. We'll use in our house red and in our Kev Ronk program somewhere between 5 and 10% American oak. That gives it a little bit of a push, but for the most part, I really am enjoying using the larger format. I can't wait to see what come out of these shtooks and that Brian has. I'm trying to push to get a couple bigger barrels, but
by the way, a shtook is a large oval for people yes. who don't know.
Sorry.
Very large oval. I'd like to say a couple things about our Michigan terroir and what's really wonderful and unique about it. I cut my teeth on the French classics way before I started to make wine. And so I had a pretty good idea what those wines tasted like. And I was shocked when I first made wine. The wines that I made, even my first tries, reminded me of some of these really expensive French bottles that I'd made. So right away, I knew that we had good terroir as well as good quality fruit. However, you know, our wine should not taste like a French wine. It should taste like a Michigan wine. So when I do Cabernet Franc, for example, I have the Loire in my mind when I think about, you know, how I want to steer the wine in terms of, and Cabernet Franc also is another grape that doesn't really benefit from a lot of oak. I think, in my opinion, the best Cabernet Francs just have a very trace of even just neutral oak. And that beautiful spicy fruit just comes right through like a bright beam in the middle of the palate. Those are my favorite Cabernet Francs. And I think that's a very hearty variety. It's a very versatile variety. It makes a fabulous rosé. I think up and down our shoreline, almost everywhere, we can make really unique, wonderful Cabernet Francs. The other thing I'd like to say is I think some grape varieties actually do better here in Michigan than they do in Europe. I'm going to argue that some of our Blaufränkisches are already as good as the best coming out of Austria, which is the home of the grape. Who's to say that some of these grape varieties from Europe might actually make a better wine here in Michigan than they do in Europe? Maybe it might be more suited to our terroir.
I think our Pinot Blancs have way more character.
Oh, totally.
Aromatics and presence than any that I've tasted from anywhere. And it's a signature of something happening correct. There's a synergy between plant and environment and people that is coming together here. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
I have shocked a number of my friends with your Pinot Blanc, Brian, just to let you know. Alsace freaks, you know?
Yeah.
They go, wow, this is amazing. What is this?
And the people, I have a lot of friends in the Finger Lakes that are in the wine industry. And they're always intrigued. Like, how do you get, like, they think of Pinot Blanc as it's a workhorse grape. You can use it to blend, fill things out. You know, it adds a little bit, but it's sort of a neutral grape around the world. And here it's anything but neutral. It has a lot to say.
Absolutely agree.
This is a good transition. I wanted to ask about Michigan wine scene. You know, are there successes in other markets that gives you like excitement and energy? Do you feel like, where is the Michigan wine scene headed? And are you guys having successes in other markets as well?
Yeah. So I'm super pumped right now because I just got back from Detroit and I can't stop talking about how fantastic the Detroit market is. We had an absolute blast. And the thing that was so encouraging is the wine culture there is excited. And the people from the buyers to the customers are experimenting like crazy. I was blown away by the intricacies of the wine list and how easy it was to be bewildered by my options of what I wanted to try because there were so many great wines on there and in wines I'd never heard of, wines I couldn't pronounce, wines I wanted to learn about. And there is a vibrancy down there that I want to see spread throughout Michigan. We need it up here drastically because there's like, again, there's this, what do you have kind of attitude. We see the same thing in Chicago. There's a real growing interest in wines that aren't necessarily totally known. And from Chicago's point, they view us as being their backyard local, which we are. We share the same water. I've always found it easier actually to sell wines in like New York City, Chicago, Detroit than in Traverse City. Why? You know, are we not exotic enough? Maybe not, because they see us every day or something. But I think that the emerging markets are so much fun. We're getting lots of inquiries from distribution around the country, and are, you know, quietly expanding that. You know, Michigan's really what it comes down to is let the wine talk, and it does half the work for us. Because if you just taste the wine, you don't tell anybody where it's from, they're going to want to know where it's from.
Yeah, I agree. I've been marketing my wines in Chicago since I started. And there was always, with the chefs like Michael Foley at Printer's Row, there was always interest in having something high quality that was local. Unfortunately, my generation is a bit narrow-minded when it comes to wine. And so if it didn't come from Napa Valley or from France, it wasn't any good. The new generation doesn't have that ridiculous attitude, fortunately. And as Brian said, you know, they're willing to explore something and they don't have the biases. So I think we do have a much more open-minded field now. I just wish our ability to supply the, you know, these other markets was better than it is, but that's okay. I sell my wine in about 5 different states. Limited, of course, but nonetheless, yes, there's a lot of interest. And whenever I go to California or Oregon, I always pack a few of my own wines to share. The West Coasties love to taste wines from other places besides the West Coast. And it's real fun to have them taste our wines. I've had a number of my good friends. I have some friends that are in the industry that are originally from Michigan out there, and they like to pour the wines for people and blind. What do you think this is? You know, and they almost always are very complimentary. Wow, I love this wine. What is it? Where is it? You know, or they try to guess. And then they're always shocked when they find out it's from Michigan. So I think the word's starting to get out a little bit, you know, that Michigan's making some really cool stuff. I heard from some friends that visited Arista down in Russian River. And I guess somebody had heard about Michigan wine there at the tasting room. They were saying, yeah, we hear you guys make some really good whites down there and some really good reds too, you know? So I think the word's starting to get out, which is nice. It's been a long time coming.
30, 40 years of working here.
Yeah. Well, Brian, I think, you know, when I first started, I think most people were, you know, just trying to make stuff to attract people off the freeways. Whereas now I think there's a contingent of winemakers now in Michigan that are actually trying to make something world-class. And that makes a big difference, you know, when the art is more important than the almighty dollar. Down here in the Southwest, we have the curse of I-94, you know, and there's been fortunes made selling wine off of I-94. So when I first got started, nobody was really interested in making high quality. They're interested in making, you know, sweet wines for the I-94 crowd. But that's all changed. And now I think a lot of people are really focusing on, let's see how good we can be here in Michigan instead of how fast we can make a fast buck.
Right. And the fact that there's almost no rules now, I mean, our possibilities are limitless of what we can do as far as, like we were just talking, vessels or varieties or techniques. And I think the open-mindedness of the current wine buyers really feed into that. I think the Finger Lakes are having a really good success, obviously because of their proximity to the big city there. And you know, there are people out there that are doing some pretty interesting things as well. You know, the off the wall stuff, you know, longer ferments, longer aging, vineyard specific things, vineyard specific Rieslings, and things of that nature. And I think that we're right there with the Finger Lakes. We've been out there a few times, and their success, I think, is only due to proximity and the fact that they do a better job marketing themselves than we do, a much better job. But there's nothing that's getting made out there that's, you know, head and shoulders above anything that's in this state. That's for sure.
New Yorkers have always been more accomplished at letting their skills be known. Some would call it bragging, maybe, but we're a little too humble here, and I'm guilty of, shucks and stuff like that. But our wines are damn good, and they need to be tasted.
because of my age, I guess. And I was originally inspired by Dr. Constantine Frank. So one of the first trips I made was to the Finger Lakes back in the 80s. And I can tell you that at that time, the Finger Lakes was looked upon by the New York City folks as Podunkville. They did not take them seriously at all. So it really has been in the last 15, 20 years where Finger Lakes has gained notoriety. And oddly, they gained notoriety outside of the state first before the people in New York decided to take them seriously. And then, of course, I think some of their rich friends that had property on Long Island, when they started planting grapes on Long Island, that got the attention of the New Yorkers too. And now they're willing to embrace even the Podunkville wines and from the Finger Lakes, you know. And we've kind of had the same, a little bit of the same here. I think our Michigan wine collector scene here has had it's taken them a long, long time to take Michigan wine seriously.
Finger Lakes did something though that, and maybe this isn't for this forum right now, but it's worth talking about. They have the Finger Lakes Wine Alliance, and this is a winery driven organization with a singular focus on talking to the trade industry. And about 15 years ago, they launched this thing. And I think a lot of their success is due to that collective mentality of let's not worry so much about the big picture of tourism and how difficult it is, like talk to everybody. Let's talk to the trade and let's talk to the wine press. And that was their focus. And this is where that explosion came from. Obviously, they have quality wines. And I think one of the things you're going to see from Michigan is those collective mentalities come forward a little bit more and saying, right, let's get together and talk about this and with focused conversations.
Do you think what the wine collaborative is trying to do, Brian?
I can't speak to the wine collaborative because I don't know enough to be intelligent, but it's something that I know I'm trying to do with a number of wine producers. I think something like this is a good example of, you know, we have the same mutual interest and understanding of what we're doing. That we can collectively talk. And it's not like if 10 more wines enter the Detroit market, we're going to see a negative impact from that. If anything, we're going to see a more positive impact from that.
Right.
So there's a lot of room to collectively get together and get this message out. And I really appreciate this opportunity, Maggie.
Before I let you guys go, I know that you've got a vineyard show to go to, Brian, but is there any, this is kind of a shout out time, but is there any Michigan wines or wineries that you guys go to for inspiration or some favorite drinks to consume outside of your own?
Yeah, I got one. I like to go to Mari because Sean O'Keefe is like the one who'll constantly poke, kind of like poking the dragon and get me thinking about things I'm, you know, maybe not avoiding or not thinking about. As another winery, local winery, Mari Vineyards is doing a lot of things to push the envelope and window on both winemaking and viticulture. And Sean and I go way back, but it's one of those things where, you know, when you hang out with like-minded people, you come away inspired. And I always get something out of hanging out with that guy. So that's a winery that currently is giving me a lot of things to think about.
I'd say I probably, because of my roots, I guess I tend to explore European wines a lot. But I can tell you that I also drink a lot of Michigan wines here. I have tried my best over the years to promote my colleagues. And I get a lot of people saying, Jim, you know, what would you recommend? We're going up to Traverse City. I try to, you know, keep up on what's happening up there. So I know what's interesting, what that particular client might find interesting. So I've always promoted our industry in general. But I'm especially interested in promoting, you know, people that are really, really pushing the quality envelope. Because at the end of the day, like I said, you know, when you have a great wine in your glass, you don't have to be an expert to know that. It just tickles me pink that more and more people are really aiming high on the quality level. Because I believe Michigan can make wines so good that people will actually fly here just to see the wineries. That hasn't happened yet, but I know it can happen. And I think that's going to happen. And I think we're really on the cusp of it happening. So that's my personal thing. I love the bubbly from up north. I'm a big fan of the Pinot Blancs coming out of the north. Just like Brian said, I think it's a variety that really shines in Michigan, maybe more than any other place I know of on the planet. I've had lots of Alsace for examples, a few from Austria. Don't care for anything from California I've had so far. Maybe some nice ones in Oregon. I don't know, but Yeah, we get a unique, I would say, we get a unique expression of fruit here in Michigan that I don't find almost anywhere else. I think our Rieslings, for example, let's compare them to Finger Lakes. Finger Lakes Rieslings to me are very lean and mean compared to what we produce here. I think ours are much more voluptuous and giving and generous. Our Rieslings are. So I think we do have regional characteristics.
Me. All right. So I'll be the homer. I go to Left Foot a lot. I've spent a lot of time at Left Foot Charlie since they opened. I don't know. I'm a big fan of Brian's wines. I go there a lot to gain pretty much what he was saying about Sean O'Keefe, like just to see what's happening. I always come away with something. So that's where I go the most probably.
I'm also biking back from his house. So
yeah, I can ride my bike there. So that's another option. I'm also getting back into bourbon. That's what I'm drinking outside of wine. I'm really exploring the bourbon industry quite a bit right now. My daughter's going to school close to the bourbon country, so that helps that situation. Meeting people down in Kentucky that talk about bourbon the way we're talking about wine is amazing. The way that they can talk about the different barrels that they're using, the different profiles of yeast and mash bills and things, it's so much in tune with what we're talking about with wine. It's really cool, I think. So
I saw that Iron Fish sticker on your bottle. Respect.
I've hung out a lot with Charlie Edson at Bal Lago. Charlie is a little older than I am, actually. But he was a student at MSU when he came to visit my first winery, and he shares my absolute love of Pinot Noir. And that's another varietal that I think we can do extremely well. And our Pinots taste more like European Pinots, not like anything from the West Coast. And I think that's important to say, because a lot of people, you know, they're all gaga over Pinot Noir, and I'm going, well, guess what? Michigan makes some really good Pinot Noir. You know, it's not the same as the West Coast, but we make really excellent Pinot Noir. So, but yeah, Charlie's been a good friend over the years and a wise counselor. Had a lot of fun tasting with Charlie over the years. So I should mention, and of course, Sean, you mentioned Sean. I remember Sean when he was like, you know, about as tall as my belt line, you know, but yeah, he's a major force up there for sure.
And never a short tasting with Charlie Edson either.
No. Plan on spending half the day.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you all. I mean, if there's any last words, you are welcome to them. But
well, I mean, just specifically to the crew and the people that are working really hard on our behalf to get this all this messaging out there. I can't say eloquently enough how much we rely on your voices to help get the wines out there, because there's only so much we can do from our cool cellars up here. And to get the wines in front of people really is the excitement, because it doesn't matter how good this one is if no one ever gets to taste it. And so I really respect and appreciate what you guys are doing out there on our behalf. And hopefully it's good on your end as well, to be able to bring your customers, you know, again, this new exposure that that you have in your warehouses and, you know, eager help. We're here locally, and one of the nice things is it's a, you know, 4-hour drive from Detroit, you know, 2 hours from Grand Rapids, and you're in wine country, and, you know, Jim, even closer. So utilize this local wine country and get up here, get your clients up here and friends, because there's a lot of fun things happening, and it's not very far, and it's a great getaway. So we want to host, and we want to encourage everyone to experience wine country up here.
I think fine wine is local. You know, if you're sitting in a little cafe in France and you're tasting the wine and you go, wow, this is fantastic. Tell me about this wine. And they point out the window and they say, see that little vineyard over there on the hill? That's what you're drinking. Well, you can have that exact same experience right here in Michigan, you know? And I think a lot of people think it has to be imported to be good. And it's like, again, I think that a younger generation doesn't believe that anymore. So I second what Brian said. Thanks for all the help.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all that. You know, thank you to the listeners who are, you know, the road warriors are doing the real work. So
you guys are doing real work.
True pun.
group hug.
Well, thank you guys all for being here. It was, you know, pleasure seeing and talking to you guys. And I appreciate your time and all the energy that you put towards Michigan Wine. I'm a huge fan. And so are a lot of our sales reps, and just excited for, you know, what's to come in the future and being able to bring out the spectacular wines that you guys make.
Well, and I know that we certainly appreciate your knowledge and insight. And as you guys are subject matter experts, this is going to be a cool tool that we're going to be able to disseminate to our staff, and they'll be able to enjoy your words. So thank you.
Awesome.
Cool. Thanks, Jacob.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Imperial Beverage Presents Another Round. Until next time, cheers.